Lesson 30, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 1 says this: Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Let another praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips. Folks, it is very, very true that tomorrows are not guaranteed for any of us. And in fact, we can plan for tomorrow, and we can plan for all the tomorrows that will come after that tomorrow. And we can plan for this, and we can plan for that, and we can get our calendar out, and we can mark it up. In fact, there's a person in this room that carries a little notepad in his pocket and has for how many years, Chuck? 40 or 50. Have you got it in your pocket? Let me see. I want everybody to see. It's always there. It's always there. There it is with his pen. Now, it's not a calendar. It's just a little. Is it a calendar? It is a calendar, yeah. And he has the little tabs that he pulls them down. Does that tell you anything about his personality? And he can plan, and I bet you it is just plumb full. But we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't even know what's going to happen at noon today. We don't know what's going to happen at 9 o'clock. No one knows. Thankfully, we do not know. But the thing about it is we can make all the plans we want to make, but circumstances may come along that will change those plans, and we all understand that. I think when we're younger, we don't understand that, but as we get older, we understand that. Well, Solomon here is making the point in this proverb, in fact, these two sentences that make up this proverb, it makes this point that no one should boast about the things that you're going to accomplish tomorrow, because you do not know whether you're going to accomplish them or not. But more than that, even if you do accomplish something tomorrow or today, don't boast in about it, but let someone else boast about it for you. If it's worthy to be praised, let someone else do the praising of it. And you should be humble, and you should not boast about it yourself. It should not come out of your lips. Verse number 3. A stone is heavy, and the sand weighty, but the provocation of a fool is heavier than both of them. How many of y'all have ever gone out to the beach or someplace like that with your tennis shoes on, gone walking out into the surf? And when you came back in, your shoes had so much sand in them, you could barely move them. That's what he's talking about, how weighty that sand is. He's talking about how a stone is heavy. You can take any stone, put it on your back. Oh, you may think it's not heavy for long, but the further you carry it, the tireder you get, the heavier it will be. And when you finally get that stone off your back, you'll go, "Ooh, baby, wish I'd have done that a long time ago. Got rid of that." Fools, Solomon is making a comparison of the weight of a stone or a big stone and the weight of sand on us with the provoking that a fool does. A fool will provoke people, and that provoking that he does is one reason that they are considered a fool, is because they provoke. Now, I wish we'd have been able to tie this into one of those verses that we did last week, one of those verses that talks about in the proverb that talks about how a fool will not ever keep his mouth shut, but will keep saying things that he should not say, all at the wrong time. Now, folks, we all know fools. We do. And the reality is we think, oh, they're just mouthy. But when you really back up and you look at them, they really do display the intent and the true definition of what Solomon calls a fool. A fool is a person who is wicked, and they may jest with you, and they may poke fun at you. And the proverb that I'm talking about said that you should not listen to a fool, because a fool will go around and he'll say something and he'll get caught in it, and then he'll say, "Oh, I was just kidding. Oh, I was just joking." Remember that from last week? "Oh, I was just joking." That's a fool. But you know what? They're not doing that out of joking. They're doing it because of meanness. They're doing it because of wickedness. There's always just that little edge that's there. And you think, oh, they're just being funny. But, you know, there comes a time when it's just not funny any longer. And that's because they are trying to get your goat in some way. Can you get your goat? Anybody's ever got your goat? Surely they have. Yes, they have. Yeah. Verse 4. Look here. Wrath is fierce, and anger is a flood. But who can stand before jealousy? Well, what Solomon is saying here is wrath, anger, and jealousy. Now, folks, they are three of the most damaging emotions that a person can have. And if you don't believe that, just think about somebody who is angry all the time, who is lashing out at people, and what makes him angry and lash out at you is his jealousy for what is going on in your life. Because he wants something going on in his life that way, and because he doesn't get it, he is angry and he lashes out in wrath at you. Just besides that, just being jealous of everything in the world. Now, wrath is bad, Solomon says. Anger is bad, but jealousy is worse than the other two. And we have to be careful with that. Now, folks, every one of us in this room, we may be able to temper our anger, and we may be able to temper our wrath. But the thing we have to watch out for is jealousy. Because jealousy will just ooze out when you're never expecting it to ooze out. It will come out of you and people will think, what is wrong with him? What is wrong with her? What is wrong? She has been blessed beyond measure and yet she still wants more. He has been blessed by the things of his life and yet he still wants more. He's not happy with me. He's only happy when things happen to him. So we have to be careful with that. We have to be careful. And we have to be careful also that we do not turn our wrath towards people and show our anger. That's what Solomon is talking about. Verse number five says this. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Did you catch that? Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Well, a person can receive an open rebuke and make adjustments in his life when he hears that open rebuke. In other words, the person is unhappy with them or something needs to be corrected in their life and a person comes and says something to them to help them correct something that is maybe an offense. In fact, we could even go to the Matthew 18 passage. It's a very interesting passage about verse 15 in Matthew. You all know that passage. It says, if someone offends you, go to him. If someone offends, go to him in private, and you, if he hears you, you will gain a friend. It's very interesting, too, for those of us, because I actually quoted it wrong, and I'm sorry that I quoted it wrong. I said, if someone offends you, because I was intending on telling you about that word you. The word you is not in that passage. It has been translated into that passage by some of our versions, but it is not in the original text. It is not even implied in the original text because Matthew chapter 18, verse 21 handles you. Verse 15 doesn't handle you. If you see someone sinning against someone else, it is your place to go to that person and say, you are sinning against that person. Stop sinning against that person. Here's what you're doing. And if that person hears you, then you have gained a friend. If he doesn't hear you, go take one or two with you and go and approach him again. If he still continues to sin against someone else, then take it before the church. Now, that's very important. Now, when you turn around to verse 21, if you'll remember in Matthew chapter 18, verse 21, Peter comes along and says, but Lord, what if he sins against me? You see, you have to take the whole passage in context. Oh, we want to grab that as if somebody sinned against me. I'm going to go talk to him about it. No, if he sins against you, just forget it. Because the Lord said to Peter, if he sins against you, forgive him 7 times 70. A lot, in other words, 490 times. A whole bunch. Just forgive him. When someone sins against you, just turn your head and forgive it. Don't go gossip about it. Don't go tell anyone else about it. Just forgive them. But if you see them sinning against someone else, then it's time for you to go to them and say, I noticed what you were doing, and you need to understand, you were sinning. You were sinning against that other person. And hopefully they will hear you. If they don't, then take a couple of friends. If they don't hear you after you take a couple of friends, then take it to the church leadership. Church leadership will then get involved with it. But if they sin against you, just leave it alone. Just say, the Lord bless you, the Lord keep you, the Lord make his face shine upon you. And of course, that's one of those bad things too. Anyway, you know what that is. When the Lord, you seek the Lord's face every time in the scripture, every time in the scripture, when it says seek the face of the Lord, that means seek his punishment that is well deserved. That's what that passage means. That's what that those words mean. Well, here it is better to have someone come to you and say, hey, you've sinned. Well, you can make an adjustment. You can change your attitude. You can change your wording of that. But he's talking about love here. He's comparing. He says, you know, but when love is concealed, you know, it's no good. It's better to be openly rebuked than it is to have someone who loves you who you don't even know about that love, or for you to love someone that no one else knows that you love them. When a person does not know that someone loves them, they can do nothing about it. They just go on down the road and do not know that there is a relationship there, someone who is dear to you. Folks, this is one of the most loving churches in the world. I know that because of all the number of cards that go flying through the mailboxes towards people, and all the food that is delivered at times of bereavement, where our people are showing outpouring love, and the people can understand who are needing these things can understand that love and can reciprocate and can thank people. But if love is just quiet love and no one ever knows about it, then the person who needs that love at the moment they need that love, at the time they need that love, when love is something that the Lord wants us to do to surround someone whose heart is breaking. We're not talking about a sexual love or something. We're talking about true friendship love is what we're talking about here. That's whenever it really is something good. Faithful words, Solomon goes on to say, can come and they can wound you for a moment. For if you give a rebuke to someone, back to that topic, if you give a rebuke to someone and that rebuke tends to wound that person, cut him deep. Now, we're not talking about physically. We're talking about emotionally and mentally cut him. What can happen is that wound can heal. And as time passes, and we all know this, when someone has said something to us and we have been highly offended by what they've said to us, as the days pass, we realize they were doing it for our own good. They were doing it to help us. They were doing it so that we would not go off the beaten path. They were doing it out of love. But one of the things that he also says here, the last phrase, deceitful words that come from an enemy are like kisses that come from an enemy, because those kisses, they come, it's like flattery. And we're going to have another passage on flattery today from Solomon. Flattery comes for the purpose of making you feel good, but most of the time flatteries are filled with lies, and they are not truths in any way, form, or fashion. All right, let's look at verse 7 here. Verse 7 says this, if I can turn my page. A sated man, sated, what does that mean? That means satisfied, okay? A satisfied man loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. Now, when the stomach of a man is satisfied by the food that is put into it, when something comes along at the end of the meal that's going to have honey on it or anything sweet, it's not as sweet as it would have been as had that been the first thing you ate. You know, some of you have been out with me. I am very guilty of eating my desserts first. I will do that. Huh? Life's uncertain. That's right. So you might as well enjoy desserts. That's right. In fact, we went down to BJ's down. I had lunch yesterday, and I ordered a chocolate chunk pizookah with ice cream before I had my barbecue sandwich. And my wife was not real happy with me, and she's never happy with me, but there are just some places that they have great stuff. Like when you go to the Cheesecake Factory, why eat a big meal when you're looking forward to the cheesecake? What do you go for? If it has cheesecake across the wall, the front of it, go for the cheesecake and let the other be the dessert, you know, the stuff. That's just the way I feel. It's my own person. It's my own person. That's right. I just can't. Well, when you eat something and you go after something sweet, remember in last week's lesson, honey was the sweetest thing that they could ever eat back in the days of Solomon. And honey is actually sweeter than sweet dates and all that because it's the sweetest thing they knew. That's just historically a fact. Well, but what he's coming along in the Proverbs to say, but listen, if a man's hungry, no matter what he eats, no matter how bitter it is, it's sweet to him. And some of you know what we're talking about. Some of us have been hungry. Some of y'all have been so hungry that it didn't matter what you got in your mouth, be it poke salad. How many of y'all have eaten poke salad? Poke salad? Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. Do what? I tell you what, it's good when it's all you got to eat. When you're living out in the woods and you're that's all you got is poke salad, it's pretty good. A little squirrel on top of it, that's pretty doggy. Anything, even bitter herbs, if it's food and you are starving, it's sweet to you. That's what Solomon is trying to say there. All right, verse number 8. Like a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man who wanders from his home. Now, I want you to focus on the word wander here. Don't get lost in the other words, because what it means is wander means to go out aimlessly without a purpose, just to roam around. Now, birds do not just fly around aimlessly. They are on a mission when they're flying around. If they have chicks in a nest or even eggs in a nest, when they leave, they're leaving for a purpose. And they come back once they have found that for which they are looking for. Even for those of y'all who love to go play with the doves in September, October, and all that type of stuff, you go down to the watering hole to wait for those doves to come visit you because we're waiting for them to come get water, right? They're coming on purpose, and we know their characteristics. So a bird does not wander, and that is what a man should not do. We should not go out and just wander aimlessly. It's very interesting, flipping back into the book of Genesis. After Cain had killed Abel, the scripture says that he left and he went out to a certain land, and the land of Nob. And what the word Nob means is the land of wandering. He went out, west. He went out to the east, and he was wandering out there away from the rest of his family, the rest of his mother and his father. He took his sister to be his wife, be a wife with him, and went wandering. And they wandered and wandered and wandered. And of course, they basically became nomads at that point in time. Well, a man who wanders from his home is not doing something that is safe. It is not safe for him. It is not safe for his family. And many men have wandered away from their homes. Some of the times that we can see this is especially when there's depression in the land, economic depression, when men would wander from their homes to try to go find jobs and leave their wives back with the kids. And the men would end up homeless on the streets of Chicago or Dallas or someplace like that, while the mom has still got the kids back at the house and still feeding those kids and taking care of those kids. And the man has wandered away aimlessly, not knowing where he is going. We see this quite often as people wander to Houston. They truly wander to Houston looking for jobs. They don't have a job when they get here. They don't have any. They just decide we're going to go to Houston and it's got to be better in Houston. And there are seasons in our life seasons in the last 25 years, I should say, like to be exact, where more people are coming to Houston because there's absolutely no jobs anyplace else. And Houston tends to have jobs, but that doesn't mean that everyone is going to get a job here. And so one of the things that we have had to do in Helping Hands over the past years is sometimes load them up on a bus and send them back from which they came, where family could take care of them. But the hardest thing we do with that is they came here wandering to Houston for a job because they were trying to get away from family. So fences had to be mended. And it's so interesting how some people get so low in their life that they finally realize that home was not so bad at all. And so we, and through Sagemont Church, helped them get back there. Man should not just go wandering aimlessly. Solomon, that is a great proverb for us to remember. Oil and perfume, verse 9, make the heart glad. So a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. Now, especially in Solomon's day, hope you're not offended by this, don't be offended by Solomon, because they did not take a bath every week in Solomon's day. In fact, they didn't even take a bath every Saturday night, whether they needed or not in Solomon's day. In fact, they didn't even take baths very often. So what they would do is they would use oil that had different herbs or scents put into the oil, or they would thin out the oil and use, they would call it perfume when they thinned it out with something else like wine or something like that they would thin the oil down with. They would, the oil and the perfume would help cover the aroma that they naturally had. So what Solomon is saying here, when a man brings counsel, especially good counsel, it covers over the need that's in that person's life. That person has done something that is wrong. That person has done something that is damaging his life. That person has done something that is causing heartache and pain to others. A man who comes and gives good counsel to that person, it's like putting a sweet perfume over the stench that is a normal body stench. It covers it up so that people can stand to be around you. Now, I know people in this world, in this church, maybe even in this classroom, who need a good dose of oil, of counsel from somebody, so that other people can stand you. And if you listen to that counsel and make some changes, the Lord will surely bless you and people will be happy with you. Look here, verse number 10. Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your own brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother far away. Now, listen, Solomon is not dismissing here the importance of relying on families. That's not what he's talking about here. Rather, what he's talking about here, he's trying to bring to light that the importance of trusting and relying on neighbors when trouble comes your way. Neighbors are sometimes some of the best folks to help you when trouble comes your way. And it is better to be ministered to and helped by a neighbor than to go without the help of family members when they live a long ways away. A long ways away. You know, my family is here in Houston. For almost 22 years of my married life, all the rest of my family and my wife's family was almost 300 miles away. So when we had needs and we struggled, the people who helped us the most were not our family members, but the people around us. I never will forget the 22nd of November of 1986, I went out to be a good neighbor to a guy who was parked out in our parking lot at Long Point Baptist Church, and his battery was dead, And so I opened the hood, and we've got the jumper cables out, and I jumped him off, and the truck was parked about 3 feet in front of the brick wall of our chapel. So my back was to that brick wall. And after we jumped him off, I took the jumper cables off pretty quick, and I slammed the hood, and I said, "That's that." And as I felt the hood shut, I felt the truck coming towards me. And then I felt the pressure of the brick wall on the back of this elbow, and I realized the truck was actually in gear. It was one of those trucks, those Ford trucks, that could start in gear. And as I tried to move out, my hand was stuck. I had no choice but to yank it out, and I moved my hand over about half an inch. Had to have surgery and all that. Our families were 300 miles away. We were supposed to leave for Thanksgiving the next day, but the families were up there. Well, they had their parties planned and everything. And so I never will forget, you know, my wife being so disappointed whenever she told them that we were in the hospital, and their reply was, "Well, we're sure going to miss y'all." But let me tell you something. We didn't miss anything. It was probably the most relaxed and the best Thanksgiving we have ever had in our lives, and we have talked about it because the people of Long Point Baptist Church brought more food to that hospital than we could ever eat. In fact, we didn't have any refrigeration to store it. We were having to send it back home. People were outpouring their love on us like crazy, because that's what people, friends, are supposed to do. That's a perfect example of what happened to us and what Solomon is talking about in this verse. Do not